Welcome to All My Children Wear Fur Coats, a program dedicated to creating a legacy for your pet. Animal companions, your pets, your children, whatever you call them, they are dearly loved family members. As pet parents and animal lovers, we have an obligation to ensure their current and future well-being. Join estate planning attorney and animal advocate Peggy Hoyt, your host, every Monday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time here on naturechannel.fm. Peggy explores the many alternatives available to help you provide for the future care of your pets. They love us unconditionally. Let's make sure we care and provide for them in every circumstance.
Hello and welcome. You are listening to All My Children Wear Fur Coats on naturechannel.fm. I'm your weekly host, Peggy Hoyt, and as most of you know, I am an estate planning attorney and animal advocate. And in my daily practice, when I'm working with my clients, we often talk about planning for minor children, so families that have minor children. And I often think of pets as sometimes being similar to minor kids, only they're minor kids that are never going to grow up. So they're going to be kids that we need to make sure that we plan for the balance of their lifetime. And there's so many things to think about in that regard. Do we have a trusted family member or friend that we would feel comfortable leaving our pet to? And if we are going to do that, are we going to leave any money to go along with our pet so that our friend won't have the financial responsibility of also providing for our pet? If we're not going to do that, are we going to create a pet trust for the benefit of our pet? So some of my clients like the idea of creating a pet trust so that we have instructions that go on for the lifetime of the pet to make sure that it's going to be cared for in the same way that it's been cared for during your lifetime. Now, since our pets are pets and they're not actually people, they cannot be beneficiaries under the law. So as a result, the only way they can be a beneficiary is if we create a pet trust for their benefit where they're actually a beneficiary of that trust. And then making sure we leave enough money for the benefit of our pet is also going to be one of our challenges. So as you listen to this show each week, we talk with a variety of professionals from all different areas of the animal world, and we touch on these very important topics like planning for our pets. But today we have with us a special guest. Her name is Jennifer Dietz, and Jennifer has been a longtime friend of mine, and I'm going to tell you a little bit about her. She went to the University of Florida for her undergraduate degree, and she graduated with highest honors. She was also a member of the National Golden Key Honor Society and also Phi Beta Kappa. She also went to the University of Florida College of Law, and she graduated in 1991. She has spent the majority of her legal career as an in-house attorney to major insurance companies such as Kemper Insurance Company and Liberty Mutual, Fireman's Fund, just to name a few. Prior to working as in-house counsel, she was selected by Attorney General Robert Butterworth to handle civil litigation matters on behalf of the state and the state's agencies. Today, she serves as an adjunct professor at Stetson University College of Law, my alma mater, where she teaches the Animal Law Seminar Program. She is one of the founding members and the former chair of the Animal Law Committee of the Florida Bar. She is currently a member of that Animal Law Committee's Executive Council. In 2007, she opened a solo practice focusing on animal law issues throughout Florida, and it's my pleasure to be able to welcome her to our show today. Welcome, Jennifer. How are you?
I'm very well, Peggy. Thank you for having me on your show.
Well, you are so welcome, and we're going to talk about a topic that's really interesting and probably not one that many people know much about. And so you are an animal advocate like I am, and although I focus my practice in the area of estate planning, today you're going to talk to us about the link between animal cruelty and interpersonal violence. And I'm willing to bet most people haven't ever thought about that. But talk to us a little bit about what that link is.
Sure. Thank you. The link has been named the link by professionals who understand the roots of violence against children, spouses, and partners, as well as aggression in our neighborhoods and society. It has to do with the cruelty to animals, which is often a part of this landscape of violence that we're seeing. The link between animal abuse and human abuse has long been recognized, but now it includes the relationship between animal abuse, domestic violence, child abuse, and elder abuse. The link shows that a staggering number of statistics link animal abuse to interpersonal violence, and it has garnered international attention and prompted legislative responses in most states in the United States. People who abuse animals rarely stop there.
That makes sense, and I'm wondering how you got interested in this particular area of animal law, Jennifer.
When I was teaching at Stetson about 6 years ago, a student asked me about the link between animal cruelty and interpersonal violence, and we did a paper together, and that's how I got interested in it, and I've always had an interest in it since then. So it's been about 8 years or 7 years that I've had an interest in this area, and I do a lot of research on the statistics, and I'll provide some today, but that's where my interest stemmed from, was a student asking me about the link.
Okay, so I also taught animal law, as you know, at Barry University, and I didn't have the opportunity that you did to learn about this link between animal cruelty and interpersonal violence, but one of the that happened to me while I was in that role was that I became a vegetarian. And so how has this interest in animal cruelty and interpersonal violence affected you in your day-to-day personal life?
That's a great question. I actually am a vegetarian, and it came from the teaching the seminar for so many years, the animal law seminar at Stetson, as well as my desire. I saw so many animals throughout my teaching as well as through my research, how many animals are abused by people who go on to abuse humans. And the statistics are staggering, and that made me want to, if I could, adopt all those animals, but I certainly can't. But I do Facebook to help share the animals that were used as bait dogs, that were abused, and I try and find them forever homes where they're going to be loved and cared for. And that's one of my passions, is take the underdog that had a bad life and give it a better life.
Yeah, that's a really fabulous goal. We had a guest on the other day, and one of her philosophies that I thought was incredible was, you know, every time you rescue a dog from some sort of a shelter situation, so let's say it's been taken away from an abusive family environment and now it's in a shelter, anytime you can give that kind of an animal a home, it actually saves two animals. One, the one that you brought home, and then two, the one that you just made room for in the shelter.
That's exactly right. I agree with you 100%, Peggy, and that's why I think in my personal life why I adopt pit bulls who have been abused, and they are fantastic animals, and all they want is to be loved, and people are afraid that I have brought home a fighting machine, but they're actually quite the opposite. They are so grateful to be loved and cared for, and they get to sleep in bed and things like that they are actually the most loving animals I've ever had. I've had dogs my whole life, but I turned towards pit bulls when I saw bait dogs as well as people abusing pit bulls and having them, like you said, taken away from an abusive home.
So, yeah, it's kind of fun to say that there's no such thing as a bad dog. There's just bad owners. And
right.
Certainly within the realm of pit bulls, they probably get the worst rap of any dog out there, and yet they are probably one of the most common varieties that might be owned by a person that might fall into this animal cruelty, interpersonal violence link.
Exactly, exactly. And that's my love for pit bulls, just as most people love certain types of dogs, goes to that and recognizing that the abuse that is given to the dogs or forced upon the dogs is actually aggressive and antisocial behavior on the part of the owner of that dog. And that's
so talk,
why I think
expand on that a little bit more. Yeah.
Okay. Well, animal abuse is a very good, reliable predictor of violence against people after young abusers grow up. So in 1997, there was a study that found that 70% of all animal abusers had committed at least one other crime. But more interestingly, almost 40% had committed violent crimes against people. So the analysis of these groups of abusers and non-abusers over a 20-year period found that animal abusers were times more likely to commit violent crimes against humans than the non-abusers. So five times more likely is a huge number. And that number correlates to child abuse, domestic violence, elder abuse, and other interpersonal violence. So the correlation is there between animal abuse and the onset of adult abuse committed by adults against other adults or children or seniors or their own partners or spouses.
Right. And so you do hear a lot of times that oftentimes people will stay in abusive relationships because they're afraid to leave their animals behind.
Right. And that is true. We'll talk about that in a moment about how women in general, the statistics have shown that battered women will delay their decisions to leave and will return to their abusers out of fear for the welfare of their animals. And that's a great point. Another interesting example is that 70% of people charged with cruelty to animals were known by the police, other violent behavior, including homicide. So they have these violent tendencies, and they look back in their history and they find that they were cruel to animals. The FBI itself sees animal cruelty as a predictor of violence against people, and they consider past animal abuse when they profile serial killers. And the national and state studies that have been conducted established that 54% to 71% of women seeking shelter from abuse reported that their partners had threatened, injured, or killed one or more of their family pets. So you're absolutely right, Peggy, that there is a great percentage of women, up to 71%, who go to a shelter and they report that their partners injured, threatened, or killed one or more family pets.
Wow, I just can't imagine that. I know that one of the shelters here in Orlando for domestic violence now has as a part of their program a kennel operation so that people can feel that they could leave home because now they can bring their pets with them.
Exactly. That is such a great thing that's going on. We have one in Tampa, but we need more, and I'm sure your area needs more too. If the women or the person who's being abused can get to the shelter to put their animals in, they're more likely to stay in the shelter themselves. And so I've been working on a rescue in Tampa where the women can go to the shelter, and it's a woman's shelter only, and bring their pets to it. And that's only been around for about 2 years now. I can't give out the name of the shelter at this time because we have to keep it quiet, and it's confidential, but they do take in the animals. And they've had everything from rabbits to cats and dogs, upwards to parrots and things like that.
Wow. Okay. Well, I'm going to be interested in learning more about that when we come back from our break. And so we are going to have to go to break here for a moment. We're talking with attorney and animal advocate Jennifer Dietz. You're listening to All My Children Wear Fur Coats on naturschannel.fm. I'm your host, Peggy Hoyt, and we're talking about the link today between animal cruelty and interpersonal violence. We hope you'll stay with us, and we'll be right back.
You are listening to All My Children Wear Fur Coats with estate planning attorney and animal advocate Peggy Hoyt, airing every Monday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time here on naturschannel.fm. Find archives and more at legacyforyourpet.com.
Nature's Channel.fm. Amazing talk radio shows from gardening to animals, natural health and wellness, and fighting for nature. Nature's Channel.fm. It's where we grow.
Organic, loose leaf, and simply delectable, Prasanna Tea Company strives to help people find balance, connect, and live in wellness. We source the finest tea leaves from pristine farms around the world and blend them with some of nature's purest gifts, creating unique infusions that are healthfully life-enhancing, blissfully aromatic, and positively delicious. Find us at PrasannaTea.com. Prasanna Tea. It's tea the way it should be. Start your week off in a beautiful way. Come to Nature Sanctuary Sunday Service for a powerful and beautiful eco-spiritual celebration where we honor and support ourselves through the reflection of nature. Join us every Sunday at 9 a.m. Eastern Time here at natureschannel.fm. Visit thechurchofnature.org to find out more about Nature Sanctuary Sunday Service and the Church of Nature.
Join the Horses, Heart, and Soul Herd and Sarah Willerson on natureschannel.fm Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern for horse wisdom straight from the stalls. Horses are the heartbeat of the earth, and they help us attune our own hearts with our souls. They encourage us to remember that we are part of the harmonious flow that is nature. Tune in every Wednesday for horse wisdom shared straight from the stalls.
Serendipity, every Wednesdays at 7 p.m. Eastern Time on natureschannel.fm. Want to know what the latest garden trends are? Learn about homesteading techniques and get helpful tips that will help your garden grow? Join Shelley Levis as she explores eco-friendly gardening methods and fun do-it-yourself projects that will have you thinking outside the pot. Serendipity, Wednesdays at 7 p.m. Eastern on natureschannel.fm.
Nature's Channel is where you grow with amazing talk radio shows. We talk about animals and gardening, natural health and wellness. Listen live and find archives at natureschannel.fm.
You are listening to All My Children Wear Fur Coats with estate planning attorney and animal advocate Peggy Hoyt, airing every Monday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time here on natureschannel.fm. Find archives and more at legacyforyourpet.com.
Hello, welcome back. You're listening to All My Children Wear Fur Coats on natureschannel.fm. I'm your host, Peggy Hoyt, and today we're talking with attorney, animal advocate, and professor Jennifer Dietz, who is also a member of the Florida Bar Animal Law Committee's Executive Council. And today we're talking about the link between animal cruelty and interpersonal violence. Welcome back, Jennifer.
Thank you, Peggy. It's a pleasure to talk to you about this interesting topic.
Oh, thank you. And so I noticed that on the HumaneSociety.org website, which is a website for the Humane Society of the United States, that they do have a link for animal cruelty and human violence. So if people are interested in getting more information, they can go to www.HumaneSociety.org and search for our topic here today. And one of the things that they're reporting on this topic is that there was a study that showed that out of 36 convicted multiple murderers, in one study, 46% of these individuals admitted to committing acts of animal torture as adolescents. And so that's consistent with the information that you're sharing with us today.
Absolutely. I have a great outline regarding children who are cruel to animals. And what happens when they're cruel to animals is that violent and aggressive behavior becomes more likely as these people become older, as opposed to non-aggressive. For instance, the two boys who went into the Columbine school and went on a shooting spree that ended in the death of 12 classmates, they had bragged about mutilating and killing animals for years prior to their shootings. There are also serial killers, as you discussed, about those who have committed heinous crimes, they have gone on shooting sprees, tortured animals, and engaged in other sadistic behavior. And these violent tendencies have been ignored until lately, when we've put together the link between the torturing of the animals as well as engaging in sadistic and violent behavior. It's more than growing pains with children. It's actually something that that individual should take as deeply psychologically disturbed individuals that need help. For instance, Ted Bundy, the serial killer, Albert DeSalvo, who was known as I forgot his name, his code name, but they were all prolific killers, and their childhoods were marked by cruel and violent parenting. But most significantly, it was also indicative of their childhood was the fact that they also would abuse and kill animals. For instance, Carol Edward Cole, one of the most prolific killers in the modern history, who was executed in 1985 for 5 of the 35 murders he was accused of committing, he described his first act of violence as he strangled his own pet puppy with his hands. And then he went on and murdered 35 people as an adult. So the link is various, it covers various issues from children who are abused, who abuse animals can become serial killers. It's not a given, but they may also, that may be a predictor of serial killing. But also, children who are in an abusive home or a violent home environment will mimic that violence when they get older. But they usually start out with animals because they can have control over animals, where adults will see the right and wrong of that. Children in violent homes and they have animals will generally not fare well. In the Dwayne Wright case, he attacked 6 dogs with lye in a highly publicized cruelty case. And the SPCA reported that the grisly acts apparently were committed just to see these dogs suffer. But before he could stand trial for killing these 6 dogs, he was faced with murder charges and the death of a disabled man, and he was found guilty and sentenced to life in prison. Ted Bundy, of course, he brutally killed and molested and killed at least 12 women that we know of, and he committed these acts after having traveled throughout the United States. He killed women in Washington, Utah, Oregon, Colorado, Florida, and Idaho. But Bundy confessed before he died to brutally killing neighborhood dogs and cats throughout his childhood and his teenage years. So it's very interesting to note that this link is being used by psychologists, psychiatrists, as well as criminologists to help figure out between whether they're going to be just animal abusers or are they going to go on and do serial killing.
So do they have they figured that out? Do they know what that
they
means?
Have? Yeah, they absolutely have. The FBI uses animal abuse as a predictor of the link between animal abuse and serial killers. They have definitely done their research on this, and they use that, like I said, as a predictor as to whether, for instance, the Columbine students, there was a predictor there. No one could see it at the time because a lot of times these children hide their tendencies to abuse animals. Albert DeSalvo, he was convicted of assault and battery of 4 women, and then he went on to kill several women. He's known as the Boston Strangler. Well, he would take dogs and cats and put them in boxes as a child and shoot arrows through the boxes to kill the animals. But he noted that he was never given any punishment is how you would say it for what he did. He did it surreptitiously, and then he grew up and he assaulted and killed many women in the Boston area.
Those are just unbelievable stories because certainly animal abuse in children would not be considered normal.
It's actually an abnormal trait, and that's how psychologists see it, as antisocial behavior and not someone having growing pains. they're actually growing up with antisocial behavior, which will then turn into antisocial behavior as an adult.
So how can, well, you were going to give another example before I cut you
sure.
off, so why don't you go ahead and give that example?
Okay, this gentleman was named Edward Kemper, and he was often locked in the cellar of the home, but when he was 13, he killed the family cat by decapitating the cat because the cat seemed to favor his sister, and he was very angry about that. Well, he went on at the age of 14 to kill his grandmother and his grandfather by shooting them when they returned from doing errands. He was sent to a maximum security mental hospital for 4 years. He returned to live with his own mother, who continued to belittle him, and then he was released. He was within a year, he was from being released from that mental hospital, he began murdering female hitchhikers, and he confessed to 8 of those killings, and he also killed his own mother. He reported that at his trial, he severely abused cats and dogs during his entire childhood and that nobody punished him. So
it sounds like maybe people were aware of his behavior, but they didn't do anything about it. And if they had looked a little closer, they might have even discovered that he was suffering abuse at the hand of his own parents.
Absolutely. And that is one of the links that they're looking at, because there are several links within the link. And the link between abuse in the home, get out on the animal, and then eventually they take it out on humans when they get older. So the link is, it's the chains in the link, that put it all together for people to understand that abuse at home from your parents, your own grandparents, moves to abuse of animals, can move to the abuse of serial killer.
So it really seems like law enforcement and people in the social work fields and in the dependency and delinquency areas of childhood law really need to be paying closer attention to the incidence of animal abuse in those households.
Absolutely, and that's why there is the link, so that there's a connection between the psychiatrist, the social workers, and also doctors and nurses, as well as the psychiatrist and the law enforcement, so that they can all talk to one another about an individual and someone that they suspect may be an animal abuser, and that way, or may be abused at home, and that way they can all share their information. So part of the link is the discussion amongst many professionals that was never really around 20 years ago. And in the last 20 to 25 years, we've had an incredible growth between these different groups of people to say there is an issue with this child or in this home. And to give you an example of the animal neglect and animal abuse as a symptom of child neglect or animal abuse, in Florida in 2013, there were 2 parents who were charged with animal abuse and child neglect for keeping 2 children and 19 neglected, starving dogs and cats in a condemned house. And so they were charged, and that is just an indication of the link between parents who neglected their children, neglected and abused the animals, and of course they were charged with animal abuse as well as child neglect.
Wow. So when we come back from our break, we're going to talk more with Jennifer about what we can do to unconnect this link, hopefully. And I hope you'll stay with us, listeners, and know that most people are not going to be animal abusers. The people who listen to this show absolutely are animal lovers. But this is very important information for all of us to have. So you are currently listening to All My Children Wear Fur Coats. We're on naturschannel.fm, where each week we talk about planning for your pets and other animal law-related issues. We hope you'll stay with us, and we will be right back.
You are listening to All My Children Wear Fur Coats, with estate planning attorney and animal advocate, Peggy Hoyt, airing every Monday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time here on naturschannel.fm. Find archives and more at legacyforyourpet.com.
NaturesChannel.fm. Amazing talk radio shows from gardening to animals, natural health and wellness, and fighting for nature. NaturesChannel.fm. It's where we grow.
Organic, loose leaf, and simply delectable. Prasanna Tea Company strives to help people find balance, connect, and live in wellness. We source the finest tea leaves from pristine farms around the world and blend them with some of nature's purest gifts, creating unique infusions that are healthfully life-enhancing, blissfully aromatic, and positively delicious. Find us at PrasannaTea.com. Prasanna Tea. It's tea the way it should be. Start your week off in a beautiful way. Come to Nature Sanctuary Sunday Service for a powerful and beautiful eco-spiritual celebration where we honor and support ourselves through the reflection of nature. Join us every Sunday at 9 a.m. Eastern Time here at naturschannel.fm. Visit thechurchofnature.org to find out more about Nature Sanctuary Sunday Service and the Church of Nature.
Join the Horses, Heart, and Soul Herd and Sarah Willerson on naturschannel.fm Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern for horse wisdom straight from the stalls. Horses are the heartbeat of the earth, and they help us attune our own hearts with our souls. They encourage us to remember that we are part of the harmonious flow that is nature. Tune in every Wednesday for horse wisdom shared straight from the stalls.
Serendipity, every Wednesdays at 7 p.m. Eastern Time on naturschannel.fm. Want to know what the latest garden trends are? Learn about homesteading techniques and get helpful tips that will help your garden grow? Join Shelley Levis as she explores eco-friendly gardening methods and fun do-it-yourself projects that will have you thinking outside the pot. Serendipity, Wednesdays at 7 p.m. Eastern on naturschannel.fm.
Nature's Channel is where you grow. With amazing talk radio shows, we talk about animals and gardening, natural health and wellness. Listen live at Find Archives at naturschannel.fm.
You are listening to All My Children Wear Fur Coats with estate planning attorney and animal advocate Peggy Hoyt, airing every Monday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time here on naturschannel.fm. Find archives and more at legacyforyourpet.com.
Welcome back. I'm Peggy Hoyt, your host of All My Children Wear Fur Coats. You're listening to naturschannel.fm. Today we're talking with attorney and animal advocate Jennifer Dietz, and we're talking about a very important topic. It's a little bit of a scary topic, but it's the link between animal cruelty and human violence. And so Jennifer's been sharing with us up to this point some of the statistics and some of the examples of some notorious killers throughout history that all have links back to animal cruelty. So welcome back, Jennifer.
Thank you, Peggy.
So, Jen, are you aware of any laws or policies addressing this connection between animal abuse and other violence?
Yes, there are laws in most states which allow psychiatrists as well as social workers and doctors and nurses at hospitals or in their private practice to report if a child, first of all, if a child looks like they've been abused, but also if they learn of abuse of an animal. The link is so consistent now and so prevalent that they look at what the child or the young adult is saying, and they actually can call it in to the police to give them an indicator that this may be someone that needs help. And so they're not looking to harm them or put them in jail, but they're looking to give them help, psychological help. Again, it's antisocial behavior, aggressive behavior that may be stemmed if they get the help they need. And the statistics have shown that between the domestic violence in a home that a child sees and the animal abuse that a child sees in the home, that they're likely to mimic it. So we want to stop that link and get them the help that they require and that they need. So that has been a real plus There's also injunctions against that can be used to keep the person who's hurting the animal from coming near the animal or threatening to hurt the animal or come within so many feet of the person who owns the animal. For instance, if a wife files a domestic violence injunction, she can ask to also include her animal in that or the family's animals in that domestic violence injunction. There are 13 states that now permit that, and then there are the remainder of the states in the United States actually have they use that as a reason to give an injunction. Now, some judges in, let's say, in Florida will put in their injunction that the person needs to stay, the abuser or potential abuser needs to stay away from the animal, but that's up to each judge now in Florida. That law may get changed to include animals, but it's definitely a great step in the right direction.
So Florida doesn't currently have a provision under our law that says if there's a temporary restraining order for a domestic violence situation that the judges must include the pets. It's just on a discretionary basis?
That is correct. It's on a discretionary basis, and it's also used as evidence of violence in the home, which is very good because if the, let's say, the spouse goes in and says, not only am I being abused emotionally, psychologically, or physically, but the animal, he or she has killed the animal, the perpetrator has killed the animal, or they have hurt the animal, then the judge is allowed to order an injunction for safety for that person, that one spouse, on that basis alone. But we don't have a law that says in Florida that you must include the animals. However, a lot of judges do include the animals in the injunction.
Okay, well, that's good to know. And you mentioned there's 13 states that have these laws. Do you know what states those are? I mean, do you have that information at your fingertips?
I don't have that, but the HSUS has it, as well as the Animal Legal Defense Fund. They have it too. They have the states. And hopefully we can get Florida to be one of those states soon. But they really have gone a long way, the other states. But again, if they go to HSUS.gov that have the injunctions.
Okay, so that's good information for our listeners. So you can visit the humanesociety.org or HSUS.org, or you can go to the ALDF.org websites in order to get more information if you're wondering if your state is one of the states that has these provisions under law where judges are allowed to include pets in temporary restraining orders. So I'm also reading here, Jennifer, that at least 28 states have counseling provisions in their animal cruelty laws where states could require psychological counseling for anyone that would be convicted of animal cruelty.
Right, and that's a wonderful new statute that's been enacted in different states where they are given counseling instead of just locked up in jail, in prison. They actually are given counseling. They must be given counseling so that they can move on with their life and get over whatever caused them to want to harm animals and then harm people. So that is those statutes are fairly new. And the counselors are very good at what they do. And I do think that we are stemming the tide by watching children, then having their bad acts reported, and then also helping these teenagers and adults when they do bad acts to get the counseling that they need.
So do you feel like there is evidence of success in the counseling arena, so where we really are breaking that link between a child who is an animal abuser and that same child then later becoming an adult who might be an animal abuser or somebody that would abuse family members, either their own children, their spouse, or elder abuse?
I think we are looking at a positive reaction to it. I don't think that we are at the point where it is 100%. Obviously, we're not getting to every child. We wouldn't have the issues that we have, for instance, in Michigan, where a man, it was as recent as 2 years ago, he beat his neighbor's dog to death with a golf club, and then he threatened the woman who owned the dog, who was her neighbor and her infant son, and he said, I killed your dog, and what more do I have to do to you guys? Next time it'll be your son. So we definitely have people who may have slipped through the cracks, but again, these statutes are fairly new, and so counseling would probably or most likely will help people, but it's getting the counselors to the right people at the right time. So that's the only downside that I see. I see it as a very positive situation for animal abusers that want to continue to abuse, will get the counseling that they need. But I think we're a long way from saying that we will have eradicated this issue in the next 5 years.
Okay. Well, and so for our listeners that do want more information, I have also located a website at animallaw.info. It's a Michigan State University site, and it's the Animal Legal and Historical Center. And they actually have a list of the states that include pets in protection orders. And it appears that now there are 30 states, as well as the District of Columbia and Puerto Rico, that have enacted legislation that include provisions for pets in domestic violence protection orders. So hopefully this is going to go a long way towards breaking this link between animal cruelty and violence in our society. Talk a little bit more, Jennifer, about the elder abuse side of it, because I work in the area of elder law in my practice, so not only do I help people plan for their pets, I also help them plan for their parents. So elder abuse is something that we see commonly in the elder law area, and it's not always physical abuse. It can also be financial abuse or emotional abuse. But talk a little bit about that elder law connection.
Sure. The elder law, the people who are who abuse elderly people, there are cases where they have found that the people have also abused the elder's animal as a way to condition or to control the elder person. And they do that by neglecting the animal, which would be starving them, not taking them to the vet, or other such things. And they use that in a way to coerce elders into doing things such as signing over powers of attorney or writing wills that they weren't, or other types of legal documents that they are forced to sign because the elder and elder's animal is going to be abused or has been abused. And so we find that the elders are one of the people who are the in need of the most protection besides the children. They definitely need the most protection, and that would be something that we really need to get a hold of or get our arms around are the elders who are being abused by people who are either their caretakers. Sometimes it can be a member of the family. It can be someone who is not a member of the family but is willing to take on the role of assisting the elder when really they're just taking advantage of the elder. And then there's elder abuse where they actually harm the elder, not just the animal, but they harm the elder as well. So you can see the link between animal cruelty that the animal the elder owns, and then they actually abuse the elder by not feeding them, leaving them in when they're incapacitated, leaving them without any care where they need daily or even hourly care. So there's definitely a link between that and the animal abuse. So we want to make sure that when people go to the home, such as counselors or social workers, that they look right at the animals that are in the home as well as the animals, as the elder person themselves, to make sure they're okay.
Sure. Well, and this has been a terrific topic today. We're going to have to take another short break, and then we'll come back and we'll finish up with Jennifer. But we're talking about the link between animal cruelty and violence in the home and protecting our vulnerable adults as well as children and our pets. So you're listening to All My Children Wear Fur Coats on naturschannel.fm. We'll be right back.
You are listening to All My Children Wear Fur Coats with estate planning attorney and animal advocate, Peggy Hoyt, airing every Monday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time here on naturschannel.fm. Find archives and more at legacyforyourpet.com.
naturschannel.fm. Amazing talk radio shows from gardening to animals, natural health and wellness, and fighting for nature. naturschannel.fm. It's where we grow.
Organic, loose leaf, and simply delectable, Prasanna Tea Company strives to help people find balance, connect, and live in wellness. We source the finest tea leaves from pristine farms around the world and blend them with some of nature's purest gifts, creating unique infusions that are healthfully life-enhancing, blissfully aromatic, and positively delicious. Find us at PrasannaTea.com. Prasanna Tea. It's tea the way it should be. Start your week off in a beautiful way. Come to Nature Sanctuary Sunday Service for a powerful and beautiful eco-spiritual celebration where we honor and support ourselves through the reflection of nature. Join us every Sunday at 9 a.m. Eastern Time here at naturschannel.fm. Visit thechurchofnature.org to find out more about Nature Sanctuary Sunday Service and the Church of Nature.
Join the Horses, Heart, and Soul Herd and Sarah Willerson on naturschannel.fm Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern for horse wisdom straight from the stalls. Horses are the heartbeat of the earth, and they help us attune our own hearts with our souls. They encourage us to remember that we are part of the harmonious flow that is nature. Tune in every Wednesday for horse wisdom shared straight from the stalls.
Serendipity, every Wednesdays at 7 p.m. Eastern Time on naturschannel.fm. Want to know what the latest garden trends are? Learn about homesteading techniques and get helpful tips that will help your garden grow? Join Shelley Levis as she explores eco-friendly gardening methods and fun do-it-yourself projects that will have you thinking outside the pot. Serendipity, Wednesdays at 7 p.m. Eastern on naturschannel.fm.
Nature's Channel is where you grow with amazing talk radio shows. We talk about animals and gardening, natural health and wellness. Listen live and find archives at naturschannel.fm.
You are listening to All My Children Wear Fur Coats with estate planning attorney and animal advocate, Peggy Hoyt, airing every Monday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time here on naturschannel.fm. Find archives and more at legacyforyourpet.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to All My Children Wear Fur Coats on naturschannel.fm. I'm your host, Peggy Hoyt, and today we've been talking with attorney and animal advocate Jennifer Dietz. Jennifer also teaches animal law seminar at the Stetson University College of Law. And Jennifer, you've been sharing with us some really important information on the link between animal cruelty and interpersonal violence, which can include children, it can include adults, it can include elders. And in just the few minutes that we have left, is there an overarching message that you would want to share with our listeners?
Oh, absolutely. I would like to share that I believe that any person who sees what they believe to be an act of violence or neglect to an animal, a child, an elder, or a friend, to contact the Humane Society, contact animal control officers in your city, and also contact the police. Because any animal that is cruelly treated or neglected may lead to further neglect within the family, and that would include the children, the elders, and the pets. So that is my one thing that I would like to ask listeners to do, is to reach out to those resources. And animal control officers are another great way to get information out there about animal neglect and abuse. And also call your police. Just one person called the Humane Society several months ago that someone witnessed a neighbor's daughter throwing a dead dog into a dumpster. They called, the U.S. Humane Society said, please call the neighbors, the animal control officers, who investigated and found a 90-year-old woman who was extremely unwell. She was living among animal waste and mildew and refuse, and the daughter would leave her elderly mother for weeks at a time. And then the elderly woman was hospitalized as she needed to be, and the dogs were taken to a humane shelter. So that's a good story about a neighbor who took notice of the abuse to the animal and then found out that there was abuse to the elderly woman as well.
Well, that's very good advice, and we would encourage all of our listeners to be proactive in reporting animal abuse or any kind of abuse to the appropriate authorities. Jennifer, thank you for joining us today, and we want to thank our listeners for listening to All My Children Wear Fur Coats every week on naturechannel.fm. We're here on Mondays at 3 p.m. each week, and if you have questions, you can always find us on Facebook at All My Children Wear Fur Coats. You can also tweet us at Twitter at Kids in Fur Coats, a little bit different from our Facebook page. But we're always happy to answer your questions. We're happy to bring to you experts in the topics of animal law, and we're always open to your suggestions. We appreciate each and every one of you for joining us and for taking good care of your pets and for including them as part of your estate plan. If you have questions about estate planning for your pets, you can, of course, reach out to me. You can read my book, All My Children Wear Fur Coats, How to Leave a Legacy for Your Pet. And I can work with you either personally or I can work with your professional advisors to help you create a plan that's going to make more than sure that your pets are taken care of, not just today, but in the event of your mental disability, in the event of your death, and also protecting your pets in the event of a national disaster. So I'm off this week. I will be talking to the Elder Concert tomorrow in Tampa, Florida, where professional guardian Teresa Barton and myself will educate elder law attorneys and elder law professionals about the importance of planning for your pets. So join us next week. We'll look forward to it. And until then, happy tales.
Thank you for joining us on All My Children Wear Fur Coats here on naturechannel.fm. All My Children Wear Fur Coats explores options and alternatives for creating a lasting legacy for your pet. Visit legacyforyourpet.com to join our email list for updates on shows, links to archives, information on complimentary pet planning workshops, and more. Be sure to tune in every Monday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time. Happy tales! See you next week.